Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 341, I chat with Phil Jones, Sony's product technology manager, about some of the company's latest video technologies. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by Cashfly at CACHEFLY.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded Friday, February 10th for Thursday, February 16th, 2017. Episode 341, Inside Sony Technology. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by BarkBox. BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys for your dog and ships them right to your door. To receive a free month of BarkBox with your 6 or 12-month subscription and free shipping, visit getbarkbox.com/twit. And by Zipcar. Zipcar is the largest car-sharing network in the world. To earn $25 in driving credit, visit joinzipcar.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and editor of avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is Philip Jones, the product technology manager at Sony Electronics. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, thanks. I've been waiting to have you on for a long time, and I'm so glad that you're here with us now. We're going to be talking all about many of the advanced technologies, the video technology specifically, that Sony has developed. But before we get to that, I want to make sure that those who are watching live at live.twit.tv can join the chat room there or at irc.twit.tv. And I will post, you can ask questions, you can post questions there, and I'll pass along as many as I can. It always helps if you put my screen name in the message. My screen name is my name, Scott Wilkinson. No dots or dashes or spaces or anything like that, because that way it shows up in a different color on my screen. Also, I want to make sure that all Twit fans know that we want to hear from you in our new audience survey. It should take only a couple minutes to finish, and it will give us a general idea of who our audience is so we can provide better programming. Also, it helps us select advertisers you'd be interested in hearing about. Of course, many of you take privacy very seriously, and so do we. So we promise to always protect that. We do not identify you in any way in the survey. So head on over to twit.tv/survey now, well, after the show, and we thank you very much for your input. Okay, so I am talking with Phil Jones here, we're going to dig kind of deep into Sony technology. You know what? You and I have conversed a number of times on camera, but usually it's only a few minutes. So I'm really happy. I'm really happy that we have a whole hour to dig kind of deeper into some of this stuff because it's really super cool. One of the main pushes or points that Sony wanted to make, and you weren't alone in making it, is the importance of color volume when talking about video displays, and in particular, high dynamic range. So tell us a little bit about Sony's perspective on why color volume is so important.
Well, a lot of times people see an HDR television set, they think that because of the brightness is about white dots or how bright I can make a white screen. But normally what you see most when you look at HDR and you compare a higher luminance set is actually higher color volume. I used to always say, think of like Ferrari in the sunlight and Ferrari in the shadows. In order to reproduce what neon truly looks like, you need enough brightness or enough luminance to go with that color to make it look realistic. Color volume was not something we talked about very much in the standard dynamic range world because the broadcast was very limited, 100 nits. So pretty much any TV could do that. But now we're starting to look at content that's recorded at much, much higher luminances. And now the ability to reproduce all those luminances is what really makes those colors and that material look more realistic.
Mm-hmm. Now, we got a couple of graphics to show people. And the first one, I believe, kind of compares the two-dimensional color gamut, which we are so used to talking about up till now. But then it goes on to show us how that relates to color volume and why that's important.
Yeah, because a lot of times when you look at the measurements we would take, that measurement is taken at like 50 IRE, 100 nits. So you get a representation of what colors a TV can reproduce at one luminance level, just one.
Yes.
But you're talking about, what is it going to do at 50 nits, 500 nits, 1,000 nits? And that is color volume. Can I still maintain that wide, rich red or blue or green as the luminance of the signal gets higher and higher? Or does it turn white, which is what happens when you exceed the color volume of a television set?
Right. And I think as you reach the peak of what it can do in terms of luminance, the colors tend to desaturate and move towards white anyway. But what also happens is that they tend to do that when you go to the bottom end of the brightness scale, which is kind of interesting. I think that's number two.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you need to be able to. So what we're showing here is the difference in color volume. You need to have basically a wider color gamut, and then you add that to the bright, we like to call it the brightness range of the TV. The color gamut is the base of the square. The brightness range is the height of the square. So you need to have a wider gamut and a higher luminance capability or brightness range in order to have that bigger box of colors.
A bigger box of crayons, essentially. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, a mountain of crayons these days.
So as we can see here, I jumped the gun a little bit on what I said before, but we'll get there in a minute. So we have a color volume on the left, which is BT709 at 100 nits, which is standard dynamic range, what we've been living with for the last 50 years. If we increase the brightness, but don't increase the gamut, the range of colors, all we do is make a longer, skinnier, taller color volume. What we really need to do in BT2020 at the same 2,000 nits is increase the range of colors and the brightness, and then we get a whole big mountain of crayons, as you say.
Exactly. And we have to remember that currently when it comes to HDR, pretty much no TV can reproduce all of the color and all of the luminance that's found in some of these signals. We're talking stuff that's mastered at 4,000 nits with a color spaces of BT2020. So there isn't a TV out there that could reproduce that. The goal is to, in 2017, extract as much of that information and display as much of that information as possible. We get asked a lot about what happens if your TV doesn't reach 1,000? What if it only goes to 800 or 400? Well, you got to remember that still, if you calibrated your set, you limited its color space to BT709, and you limited its luminance range to 0 to 100 nits. So even if your TV goes to 400, that's still four times the color volume and four times the contrast. And as you get as your capabilities of the sets get greater and greater and greater, you just get to see more and more and more of what is in that signal.
I have to say, this is one of the things I really love about the Ultra HD specification and system that we're working in now, is that it allows more than the current technology is even capable of. So it allows us room to grow, which
exactly.
I think is great.
Exactly. Another analogy that I like to use when I talk to, the average consumer or customer that's in a store is, think of it like the speed limit. Say you lived in Texas and the road was dead straight, but the speed limit was 55 miles an hour. It doesn't matter if you have a Lamborghini that could do 300 miles an hour. The rules said you can only do 55. And that was the old standard dynamic range broadcast. TVs could exceed that brightness range. They had the color capabilities, but the broadcast, when you calibrate it, said you have to be, you couldn't go beyond 709 and you couldn't go beyond 100. So all that capability you couldn't utilize. Now the speed limit is 300 miles an hour. Now, no car can do 300 miles an hour, but every car can do more than 55. And as you spend more money or as you buy into a premium set, you can go faster and faster and faster and take more advantage of its full capabilities.
Yep, exactly. Number three, graphic number three is the one I was thinking of earlier, and I misspoke there. But it shows what happens as the set, in this case, two different technologies, an LED illuminated LCD TV and a white-based OLED TV. What happens as we go up towards the peak brightness that the TV can do and as we go down towards the deepest black the TV can do? Tell us what we're looking at here.
Okay, well, the fact is there is no perfect display. Every type of display has its strengths and its weaknesses. For example, LEDs are very good at maintaining its color volume and extreme brightnesses because it's just the backlight is very bright. But as you get lower and lower and lower in luminances, I'm basically have less control over my red, green, and blue subpixels or of the LCD display. So you start your color volume would normally start to shrink. Now, there's technologies out there now, local dimming, which helps eliminate that or help reduce that, because instead of me trying to basically close the blinds, so imagine the red, green, and blue subpixels were blinds. Instead of me closing the blinds to remove the light that's outside, I just turn the sun down. So that maintains the control at the bottom. But there's ways that people are working at to improve the color volume at the bottom. A white OLED or a WOLED, as it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, you start adding more and more of that white subpixel. And then what you end up doing is the color volume at the top starts to narrow as it gets brighter and brighter and brighter. So you may see so they can reproduce really wide color gamuts, but as you start getting into the wider at the higher luminances, they start that ability starts to decrease.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. I wrote about this recently, that there is no such thing as a perfect TV. Some have strengths and they all have strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes they're different than each other. And so when you're trying to choose one, you want to say, well, which strengths are more important to me and which weaknesses annoy me less?
Exactly.
That should lead you to a good decision on what TV to buy for you, which might be different than the one that I would want.
Exactly, because it's up to the consumer, it's up to the person on what thing pulls their emotional heartstrings.
Yes.
Many people love the deep, deep, insanely deep blacks of an OLED and the benefits such as this wide viewing angle. But if you're someone that's maybe not watching in a darkened room, or your room does not cater to that, you may prefer a brighter, higher luminance, higher color volume LCD TV. It's not for Sony or anybody or you or I to say what's right. It's for that person to go in and look at both sets and pick the one that they are emotionally drawn to.
Mm-hmm. Now, you told me offline, and I'd love for you to repeat this for everybody, about how Sony came to develop its 2016 TVs. We now have the 2017s coming up, but let's talk about the 2016s for the moment. The X940D, the X930D, and later in the fall was announced the Z9D. There was some back and forth between the studios that led to some of the developments there.
Yeah, well, you know, we're involved, like Sony's involved in all aspects of this, from making the cameras to making the grading monitors like the BVM X300, all the way up to the stuff that a consumer would see in his home.
And there's a Sony movie studio as well. So you're involved in making the movies.
Yeah, we have our hands. We're involved in all of it. So there were some conversations about, you know, the studios a lot of times used to have HD sets in their editing bays. And now we're going to the world of 4K and we're going to the world of HDR. So, of course, they're looking for sets to replace those. Let's be honest, a lot of them are plasmas hanging on the walls in their editing bays. And they were looking for stuff that would best be utilized for making the content that they're going to be making now and in the future. So we were talking, and a lot of times color volume comes up, the ability to reproduce colors. Now, of course, we want deep blacks, but that's important. But you also want very good shadow detail, and you want high color volume. So they want to get kind of as close as possible to a professional grading monitor like a BVM. Nothing can do like a BVM. It's $30,000 for 30 inches. You know, that is as close to a perfect display as possible. But most consumers aren't going to spend 30 grand for a 30-inch display.
No.
So they wanted to see, after they did their grading, what would look good. What would it look like on a good consumer TV? And they wanted to have a lot of the traits that was found on that display. So color volume became something that came up and we started talking about last year. And then from that came the Z9D and Backlight Master Drive to get as close to that as possible today.
Which we're going to look at. We're going to look more closely at that Backlight Master Drive, which I think is very cool. But we have a graphic that shows the color volume idea behind the Z9D, which is your flagship, the Sony's flagship LCD TV.
Yeah. So if you look at the our target was not really with this set to give you as close to the representation of what they see in the studios on a BVM, a BVM X300, which is the world's largest RGB OLED. Mm-hmm. Because it is an RGB OLED, it has very, very good, very accurate color volume. It can exceed 1,000 nits at full color volume, top to bottom. And they wanted to get something, they wanted a set that could do that. So first thing is, we needed to, on the Z9, make sure that we can give you the blacks that or accurate color at lower luminances, and of course local dimming really helps that on an LED TV. The next thing is technologies to increase the its maximum luminance to give you maximum height to that box of crayons, as well as technologies to help eliminate things such as blooming or things like that to maximize the contrast.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, you told me again offline a couple of features that I found very interesting that you have in the Z9, one of which at least is meant for professionals and one of which is meant for consumers, leading to the title or the descriptor of prosumer when it comes to the Z9D.
Yeah, we kind of look at the Z9D as a prosumer piece, which means it's a spectacular TV for someone in the consumer world, but it also has applications and uses in the professional world. So, of course, you should always master, and we want you to master on a BVM X300. But at the same time, you need that extra display to check what's going to happen when I see it in a consumer's home. So this set has a lot of the, like I said, first thing is color volume. The next thing is, a lot of times when you talk about a consumer set, we talk about tone mapping. So, of course, the TV, a Z9D, if you put it into Cinema Pro or Cinema Home, it will utilize traditional tone mapping. When it starts getting up into the luminances it cannot reproduce, it'll apply tone mapping to make sure that all that information is shown without clipping.
Now we should say before you go on, I just want to make sure everybody understands. We were talking earlier about how UHD in general is a bigger box, is a greater standard than anything we can do currently. And I should also say that, you know, the way it's a piece is mastered now versus the way it's shown on a TV, they might not be the same. In standard dynamic range world, the mastering display and the consumer display ideally were the same. 100 nit peak brightness, standard Rec 709 colors, and so on. Now, it might be mastered at 4,000 nits, but shown at 1,000 nits. So there's a difference there. And tone mapping helps to modify the content so that it fits within the capabilities of any given display.
Exactly. If you have a TV that can exceed 1,000 nits and the content was mastered at 1,000, it shouldn't have to tone map.
Correct.
Because it could reach all of the luminances. But if you have something that's mastered at 4,000 and the TV can do 1,300 or 1,000, you're going to have to apply some tone mapping to ensure that the stuff, things that are in the extremely bright highlights are not clipped off. Now, however, that's for a consumer. But if I'm a professional, I want to know when things clip. So if you look at something like a BVMX 300, it does not apply tone mapping because it's supposed to be graded. It's supposed to grade to 1,000 or whatever the display is calibrated for. And anything above that should clip off. And because there's nothing, because that tells me that that's absolute, because we say that HDR is absolute. 200 should be 200, 300 should be 300, 400 should be 400 as you work your way up. Only time you should start applying tone mapping is when you start reaching the peak of what your TV could do. But a pro monitor should just go up to its maximum and clip off. Mm-hmm. That way you know that, okay, I exceeded 1,000 nits or what, and to bring the highlight down. So mm-hmm. if you put our set in, if the set is set to custom, it does not apply traditional tone mapping. It just goes up absolute until it gets to the point where it can't go anymore and it clips off. So we tell consumers that if they're going to calibrate a Z9D, use the Cinema Home or Cinema Pro settings as your beginning. It also makes sure that some of the consumer-based video processing remains as well.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't in the custom mode.
Exactly. Right. You could turn all that stuff on if you know what you're doing, but as a start, a lot of times I see people start off with their sets, they start off with the custom mode and then do their calibration.
But I normally do. Yeah.
Yeah. We say, but for most applications, we suggest starting with either Cinema Home or Cinema Pro and doing your calibration from there.
Got it. Got it. Well, we want to talk about a few aspects of human vision that become important. For when dealing with especially high dynamic range. But before we do, I would like to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors for this episode, which is BarkBox. Now, BarkBox delivers 4 to 6 natural treats and fun toys for your dog, curated around a surprise theme each month. BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. All edibles are made in the U.S. or Canada, and 100% of their products are tested on animals, their own. BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. BarkBox also makes their own products through their Bark & Co. brand. They've shipped over 16 million toys and treats so far. Getting started is easy. Choose your dog size, small and cute, up to 20 pounds, just right, 20 to 50 pounds, or big and bold, 50 or more pounds. Next, choose a plan. 1, 6, or 12-month plans are available. And get your BarkBox. BarkBoxes are shipped on the 15th of each month. BarkBox will keep your dog engaged, interested, and happy. If your dog doesn't like something in the BarkBox, they'll send you something else for free. Scout's honor. When your dog falls in love with something from the box, you can easily find it again on BarkShop.com or the BarkBox app. And you can cancel any time, and shipping is free in the continental United States. So give your dog the joy of a million belly scratches. Get 1 month free and free shipping with your 6 or 12 month subscription by visiting GetBarkBox.com/twit. That's getbarkbox.com/twit. And we thank BarkBox very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. Okay, Phil, you wanted to make sure we talked about a couple of human perception issues here, which are pretty important when talking about how TVs are made and how they work and what are the limitations that we need to be conscious of when thinking about televisions?
Yes. So a lot of times people think that like a big buzzword that I hear is pixel by pixel contrast, because each pixel of an emissive display is self-illuminated. So,
right,
so
like
theoretically,
an OLED.
Yeah, like an OLED or a plasma. And when you measure it, and you measure one pixel next to another, one next to one, one could be zero and one could be who knows how bright. Mm-hmm. And that is pixel by pixel contrast. It measures really good, but then you have to look at what is called what perceived contrast, what you actually see. And what ends up happening is the human eye can only perceive a certain level of contrast. And eventually you reach a certain point where adding more zones or pixel by pixel contrast, it becomes difficult for you to see. And that is called, that is because of what it's called the point spread function of the human eye. If you want to go on Wikipedia and research it, but it's about basically the as light goes into your eye past your, the lens in your eye towards your optical nerve, it kind of scatters and you see a little bit of halo.
That's interesting because we talk about haloing a lot in LCD TVs with direct backlighting. But actually, some of that might very well be in your eye itself. We have a graphic to show what we're talking about here, number five. Let's take a look
exactly.
at that.
So like I said, and you can actually do this. And the other thing that's interesting is the effect becomes more dramatic as the luminances increase, as it gets things get brighter. Because if you walk up to an OLED or a plasma, and you look at it like within you're an inch from it, you can see that one pixel is off and one pixel is on. If I back up and I play something like we were doing it before, people were seeing the Sony logo on the Sony OLED in the display, and they say it looks like it's blooming, and it's like no, it's not blooming. It's just that OLEDs are starting to reach brightnesses and luminance levels that you're starting to see the effect of this. You never really saw it at 100 nits. Because 100 nits wasn't bright enough. Mm, now we're talking 400, 500, 600, who knows, 1,000. And now all of a sudden, now you're starting to see that. And that's something that LCDs have always had. Now, let's be honest. How much of some of that, a lot of bloom that's in a normal LCD TV has to do with the fact that, you know, the backlight is always on. And you can't close it all the way. Or if you have a limited amount of zones or segments, you see a little bit of where a little bit of haloing around the display. But eventually, we're going to reach a critical mass when it comes to how many zones or segments are required, and you will be it's difficult, if not impossible, to differentiate when you're sitting on axis between the LCD and the OLED. I think you came into Black Box last year. We were showing the prototype one, and we were doing that demonstration. People and they were surprised that it looked like an OLED because there were so many zones in the prototype, so many individual segments of control in the OLED. I mean, in our backlight master drive prototype, that it was difficult for you to perceive a difference.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk more about that in a little while, but I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that there is a limitation, especially as we get brighter. In the human visual system that can cause some problems that might be attributed to, that display is blooming. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's in your eye.
Yeah. Now, let me give you a proving demo that we did at the show this year. We had our crystal LED integrated structure. You know, Cletus is what they used to they were calling it.
We're going to talk about Cletus a little later.
Cletus, 99% of that display is black at all times. But when you look at it, that's not what you see. So if we were so sensitive to pixel by pixel contrast, you'd be able to tell when you're sitting 12 feet or 13 feet from a 32 foot by 9 foot display that 99% of it was off. So, but you couldn't, and you had to get up within a couple of inches before you noticed that.
Yeah.
So that's just a real quick example.
You were very kind and let me get near the screen because you had it roped off, and most people couldn't do that, but I thank you for letting me do that. And I got right up there. And even then, it was very hard to see that the actual light-emitting part of each pixel was 1% of the area around it, and 99% of the area was black. And that close, it was hard to see.
And your brain fills in the rest. I mean, your eyes and your brain fill in the rest.
Isn't that amazing?
So that's just a quick example of maybe pixel by pixel. OLEDs have a lot of benefits, but it may not just be because of pixel by pixel contrast.
And then you also wanted to make sure we talked about the Hunt effect. What is that?
The Hunt effect, that goes back to color volume. And if you Google that, it says colors that are shown at higher luminances appear to be more saturated. So if you want neon to look like neon, not only do you have to reproduce the color gamut of neon, but you have to display that neon at a luminance getting similar to what reality is. And that's why higher luminance, you start gold looks more like gold, neon looks more like neon. If not, if it's a lower luminance, you may be able to hit the color gamut, but at lower luminances, it may just like red paint instead of red neon. So that isn't something we ever kind of, these kind of conversations we didn't have to have when we were talking about standard dynamic range content at 100 nits. But now we're talking about content that's going to be getting brighter and brighter and brighter, and all these conversations that no one had to talk about before, we have to talk about now. Color volume. In fact, I know that SpectraCal is actually now incorporating, is going to be introducing a color volume measurement. So you'll be able to not only measure color gamut, but also measure color volume. And then you can get compare, because if I look at the color gamut of three different displays, I'm really not getting what the actual potential is. It's like they may both all be 99 or 97, but one may be collapsing at the top and one may be collapsing at the bottom. You can't see that unless you test the entire color volume.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't wait to see that from the SpectraCal Calman software, where you'll actually be able to sort of rotate the thing around and look and see up and above it and below it to see what it's doing at different brightness levels, which, as you say, we didn't even have to worry about in standard dynamic range. Now we do.
Yeah, and it'll actually give you the number of colors. So based on how many colors are in that cube. So you're going to see some huge numbers this year.
Well, it's going to be great. You know, HDR, high dynamic range, is really the buzzword, the catchphrase of the day, and as it should be. 3D kind of came and went, and a lot of people are asking, well, if, you know, 3D was kind of gimmicky, isn't HDR kind of gimmicky?
Well, the difference between the two was 3D was an active thing. You had to do something. I had to go give everybody a set of glasses, and I had to do something. HDR is kind of a lean back experience. It just, if the TV sees it, it plays it back. I don't need special glasses, and I immediately get the advantage of it. If I'm already going to higher quality cameras, that have the ability to capture it, and I have the pipe and the bit rate, the capabilities to stream it or put it on a disc, and I have a display that can display it, everybody's kind of aligned that this is beneficial. Like I said, it's not about more pixels, it's about better pixels. And that's something that you can see whether you're 25 feet away or whether you're 6 inches away.
Yeah, Dolby has said much the same thing. It's not about more pixels, it's about better pixels. And HDR is a critical part of that, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, if you're buying a TV based on SDR only, that's like me saying you should buy a color TV, but look how good this black and white is. No, we should buy a color TV. It's coming, but this is the best black and white TV. Because let's be honest, as 4K comes, the majority of 4K content that's going to be coming now and in the future, more and more and more of it, if I'm going to shoot it in 4K, I might as well grade it in HDR. That is the future. And you want to, and we say, I like to say buy once, cry once. You're not planning on buying a TV every year. So why not buy a TV that is going to grow and evolve as the content gets better and better?
Well, this brings up the next question, which is HDR, which is so critically important, as we both now said, and certainly I believe it's true. But there are several different formats. There are several different systems in which you can encode HDR. There's the open HDR10, commonly called HDR10 standard, more specifically SMPTE. Standard ST2084 and 86. Yep, exactly. There's Dolby Vision, which is a proprietary system from Dolby. There's now HLG from BBC, and Technicolor has one as well. So the question of buy once, cry once, buying a TV, if it doesn't have the ability to decode some format that's on its way into the pipeline, then aren't you going to cry twice?
Well, that's a very good question. The first goal is we don't know what's coming in the future. I don't know what's coming in the future. So the goal is to make sure that I get the best from what's available. And we know that HDR10 is basically the main standard that's going to be on every disk and what's going to be found in majority of content. So if you have HDR10, you're not going to be boxed out of content. The next question is like the old DTS Dolby Digital conversations. The goal is when most customers, when they put that disk in, they just want it to play back in surround. They really don't care what logo pops up, whether it's DTS or Dolby Digital. They just want surround sound. And we've learned that too. When you go to Netflix, Amazon, even Vudu has announced that they're going to also provide HDR10. Our Ultra service, the disk. When you put that disk in, it's going to be an HDR10 at least version on there, and you'll be able to enjoy HDR. So, and if the performance is great, that should be enough.
Well, but that's the question. Is the performance of HDR10 as good as, or nearly as good as, or better than Dolby Vision?
That's a good question. I'll leave that. Everybody has their Dolby likes to make their argument, and they can go in and talk about their advantages. But our goal is at Sony to make sure that that we give you the best performance from the panels that we utilize. Mm-hmm. So for example, our televisions, on HDR10, there is static metadata.
And that's a bit of a problem, because what it does is, just to give everybody a background, it just gives you a couple of numbers that says, what was the maximum brightness of the display that was used to master this, to grade it, throughout the entire program, 2-hour movie, whatever. And whereas Dolby gives you what's called dynamic metadata, which says, what's the brightest that this scene or even this frame gets? And so it gives a greater amount of control, I think, over how it looks over time.
Yeah, normally, like I said, HDR10 material is going to give you a couple of things. What's the one, it's great in HDR, so the TV knows to switch. Number two, that it's graded in the proper in what color space, so the TV knows whether it's DCI-P3 or BT2020 or what. Basically, it just says I'm HDR, and the TV is going to pretty much assume it's going to be BT2020 because that's pretty much the standard.
That's the container in which the color gamut will be, a color volume.
Yeah, and then they give you the information on the brightest pixel in the movie and the average frame level or average frame brightness of the brightest frame in the movie. And based on the brightest pixel and the brightest frame, the TV does mathematics. But what happens if that movie has daytime scenes and nighttime scenes? Those average frame levels and are going to change. And what if only one pixel? I think a couple of studios actually checked a couple of movies, and they're like, yeah, like most of these HDR movies, a large part of it did not exceed 1,000 nits. Most of it was still at the 100 nits range. So by having just the brightest one, maybe that's not the most effective way to for the TV to be tone mapping. Well, what our sets do, because we have big brains, we've been stressing the importance of video processing forever. And this is another reason why it's so important. The way our set does is it uses some of the static metadata, like, oh, it's HDR, to know to switch to HDR and what the color space is. But it looks at each frame of the scene and looks at it dynamically, basically, and determines based on frame by frame how to best utilize the TV's panel and backlighting system to get the most from it. So we're confident that when you look at HDR10, it looks extremely good because our TV is constantly adapting frame by frame and scene by scene to give you the best that particular display and backlight system can possibly do.
So in other words, the Sony TV is using this really big brain processor, as you call it, generate their own dynamic metadata, even when they're coming in with HDR10, which has static metadata. They're generating their own metadata to better reproduce dark scenes versus bright scenes and so on.
Yeah, and exactly. And our set actually has, a lot of our sets have Extended Dynamic Range Pro, which is basically local dimming, local boosting. So based on the frame, it can determine how to use that local dimming, local boosting technology to get the most out of the highlights and where it can move the power around based on the size of the bright area and everything else. So with the goal is just to basically maximize, we try to maximize the material dynamically to give you the best performance, even if you're watching HDR 10. So processing is important. And a lot of times we get caught up on the panel, because that's the biggest part that's in the box. You and I, Scott, have been around for a long time. We remember the old monkey coffin rear projection TVs. And back then, the display was the small part, and you saw this big wood box. But now, because everything, all the electronics and stuff is miniaturized, yes, the panel is the biggest part, but it may not have the most effect over what you see. If you have two laptops, one laptop is $2,000, one laptop's $3,000. Same box, same case, same display, okay? But there's three chips in one that makes it perform better: the RAM, the graphics card, and the processor. Three little chips make one laptop perform way better and cost significantly more. And so a lot of times it's those little chips that are in the back of the TV that really separate one television set from the other. It's the recipe and the brain that makes sure everything else works properly.
Well, and the brain in current Sony TVs is called the X1 Extreme processor, which interestingly has enough power to implement Dolby Vision. And this was kind of the point I was going to get to, was up till now the Sony TVs have had HDR10 capabilities, support for that. But now at CES, it was announced that the 2017 models will have a Dolby Vision as well, which I think is a good thing, because just like DTS and Dolby Digital, as you said before, in the audio world, they can both coexist. They do both coexist in AVRs, AV receivers. So I think also HDR10 and Dolby Vision can coexist within a TV, and whatever, again, as you say, whatever comes in, it just plays and things work.
Now we have different levels of video processing. Regardless of a Sony TV, you're going to get a big brain. But there's basically two levels. We have the X1 Extreme, which was introduced in the Z9D, and also we found in our upcoming OLED, the A1E, and our 930E and our 940E television sets. And those sets will
Those are all 2017, except
those
for
are
the
all
Z9D.
2017, except for the Z9D. But they all have an X1 Extreme, and they will all do HDR10, HLG, and Dolby Vision. The other models in our lineup have a newer processor called the 4K HDR X1 that has a lot of the video processing capabilities of the X1 Extreme, but that's being brought down to our other models, like our newly introduced X900E and X850E, and those displays can play back HDR10 and HLG.
But not Dolby Vision.
But not Dolby Vision.
Because you need certain amount of power to do that. I think Graphics 6 might be something to take a look at here in this regard. Let's take a look at that. This was just telling us that it's in the
here it is, yeah.
Z9D, A1E, OLED, and the 2017 other LCDs.
Yeah, it's just that, remember, Dolby Vision is a combination of a very big processor and the programming to run it. And we have a very big processor, so we're running the program.
Mm-hmm. So I want you to tell us about the X1 Extreme. Oh, but before you do, we've got a lot more to cover here. But before you do that, I have another sponsor to thank for this episode, which is Zipcar. Zipcar is the world's largest car sharing network, operating in over 500 cities, towns, colleges, and more than 50 airports around the world. Zipcar provides a cost-effective alternative to car ownership. Zipsters only pay for the time they actually use a vehicle and have no responsibility for additional costs. So you can drive cars by the hour or by the day with gas and insurance included. With Zipcar, you'll have the freedom to choose when and where you want to drive. Zipcar's self-service vehicles are available on demand in conveniently located reserved parking spots in your neighborhood. Reserve your Zipcar in minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by calling or visiting the website. Simply book the vehicle of your choosing and unlock your selected vehicle with your Zipcard. Zipcar offers over 50 makes and models of cars that range from environmentally friendly hybrids, EVs, and PHEVs to luxury vehicles, SUVs, pickup trucks, and cargo vans. You'll have the option to choose the make, model, type, and even color of the vehicle you want based on the needs of each trip and the available Zipcars in your area. Reserving, accessing, and using a Zipcar is as easy as getting cash from an ATM. And car sharing is good for the environment. Zipsters reduce their personal CO2 emissions by between 1,100 and 1,600 pounds per year. For wheels when you want them and $25 in driving credit, go to joinzipcar.com/twit. That's joinzipcar.com/twit. And we thank Zipcar very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. Okay, so we're about to start talking about the X1 Extreme processor. And this thing is a pretty big brain, I got to say. There are some technologies in there that I would love for you to tell us about because it's pretty darn cool. Okay. We can start with graphic number 7, which will kind of give us an overview of what we're going to talk about here. Three things.
Yeah, there's three things we're going to talk about: HDR remastering, super bit mapping, and dual database processing. So object-based HDR remastering. Well, you're buying an HDR TV because you want to take it because it has this higher luminance capability and everything else. However, a lot of the content you're watching is in SDR. So just like you upscale your resolution from HD to 4K, it'd be nice if I can upconvert the material to HDR. The issue is if most video processors looks at the entire scene as one big object. So if I try to bring in shadow detail, I may blow out the highlights because I'm treating it as one object. The way that the X1 Extreme does is it, or and all of our video processors pretty much in our lineup this year, what they'll do is they basically look at each frame, divide it up into basically different types of material: dark area, midtone, and bright area. And then apply a different algorithm to each one of those objects. That way I can have details like the weave of the old lady's sweater, and also still maintain all of the shadow detail and everything else. So I can maintain the highlights and extract shadow detail. And when you apply that to the higher color capabilities, you end up with more saturated colors as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think if we go to the next slide, we will see another example of that. Here we go.
Exactly. And this is something people say when they see a Z9 on the floor on a display. They say, wow, this thing just pops. If you look at like sporting events, the shiny neon of a baseball jersey, or the sheen of cotton, or the clouds in the sky on regular SDR material, it looks more like you would see in an HDR piece. And that is because of this processing.
Right. And what we're looking at here in this graphic is we can see detail. This is compared, a conventional contrast enhancer where the entire frame is treated as a single object versus mm-hmm. object-based HDR remaster where different objects are treated differently. And you can see in the detail of the leaves in the green and the detail in the woman's blouse or sweater, whatever it is. And also in
the wood tones there.
Yeah,
exactly. So
and in each of those cases, you've got a little expansion so that you can see it better on this graphic. I mean.
Exactly. And by the way, this processing is utilized in pretty much all the picture modes. So of course it's on in Vivid, it's on in Standard. You can utilize it in Cinema Home and Cinema Pro. It's just the amount of it that is applied varies based on the mode that you're utilizing.
Mm-hmm. So tell us next mm-hmm. then about dual database processing.
Which let's save that one to last. So
okay,
let's go to
misnumbered them. Let's go to
difficulty. So if you go to number 10 first, uh-huh. so HDR remastering is actually going to be found in all of our and pretty much our entire lineup from the 850E and above. Also, you're going to get this super bit mapping. And what this is for is we talked about these sets having these huge big boxes of crayons. The problem is most of the signals that are in that we have do not have that amount of information in it. So what this does, and what you end up seeing basically is contouring. We've all seen it, banding or contouring in skies and in gradations. So what the
which is normally due by to the fact that the signal and or the display has only 8 bits of digital resolution.
Exactly. So what the X1 Extreme does is it takes all of the material, it basically up converts it to about a 14-bit signal, does all of its video processing, and then brings it down to display on the TV. What you end up with is if you go from 10-bit to 14-bit, that is, what, 16 times more precise? When you go from 8-bit to 14-bit, that's 64 times more precise. So what you end up with is smoother gradations. Basically, the goal is to give you – a lot of times you go to a store or you go look at a demo, and it's great material. But then you take it home, and what you're seeing is not exactly the same. The goal is to give you the best quality on everything you watch. We always say if I give a chef a perfect piece of meat and I give the average cook a great filet, both meals are going to be really good. What separates a chef from an average cook is what can you do with mediocre ingredients? You know, an old, you know, piece of bone and some leftover pig knuckle. What are you going to do? And the chef will put some truffle sauce and saute it for a while and get the most out of it. That is where the know-how comes in. Making great content look good is easy. Making mediocre content look very good is very hard. And that's where this type of technologies come in. Okay. So both of those are found in – so super bit mapping and HDR remastering is found on in all of our sets. And just like HDR remastering, super bit mapping, there's multiple levels, off, on, mid, high. So it all depends on how much of it you want to apply. It does not have an effect on your overall clarity of the picture at all either. It just helps soften those gradations. The step up when you go to the X1 Extreme that is not found in the X1 processors that are found in our other television sets is the dual database processing.
Okay, that's graphic number 9. Let's take a look at that.
And now we can look at number 9.
Okay.
So
and this is, by the way, this is pretty cool. I have to say, well, all of these are cool, but this is especially cool.
Yeah, well, we've gotten really good comments on how well our TVs have been do with upscaling, and that is because we've always had a database. So we've had a database in our television sets for years in that brain that it uses to as a reference when it does its upscaling. But the problem is whether you have if you have a single database or no database, it's hard for the TV to differentiate between what is noise and what is actual data or texture. Because a lot of times, if I enhance the texture, I may overemphasize the noise.
This is why most AVS forum members, and I'm among them, try not to engage edge enhancement or detail enhancement.
Exactly.
Because you'll get all kinds of artifacts that you don't want.
Exactly. And if I soften the noise, I soften the detail. So what the X1 Extreme sets have is actually two databases. One is solely looking for noise, mosquito noise, MPEG noise. So it knows that is noise, soften that. And the other database is looking for detail and then saying that is detail. We want to sharpen that. And this processing applies to pretty much all the modes in the TV. And it really has a couple of effects. One, it makes the upscaling very, very good. The next thing that it does is it helps eliminate that MPEG and digital noise that could actually affect your black level. And I think we did a demonstration for you as well when we compare a display that has great blacks but not super very good noise, but normal noise reduction compared to something like this that can do a really good job of eliminating that MPEG noise we see in streaming sources and low bit rate or bit depth content like broadcast.
Mm-hmm. Barfel is asking a question here regarding HDR remastering. Mm-hmm. Is that he's saying? I assume it's a he. Is this sort of like dynamic range compression?
Well, it's not.
It's more like dynamic range expansion in a sense.
Exactly. This is another thing about the benefit of being a company that actually makes the cameras and are involved in capturing. When the cameras capture this material, there's additional information in the scene or in that the camera's captured. It just is not utilized for when the standard dynamic range broadcast comes out. We use that information and we basically add it to the database and say, when you see this, it probably should be up here. And in there you would see this shadow right here, enhance it. So it's not really compression. It is pretty much expansion. The way they explained it to me a long time ago is they said it's kind of they use a process called the learning method. We shoot it really high resolution and wider color and wider contrast, and then we reduce it down to what the broadcast would be, and then we expand it, and then we compare, and we go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and you start to see basically patterns and how this applies, and then we basically teach the patterns to the TV, so it can do a very educated assumption on how to to bring that extra detail back into the information into the scene.
Another thing that strikes me about this dual database processing is that it might actually use the object-based. You have object-based HDR remastering, but you would also want to use the object recognition to identify something which is real content that you want to enhance versus something that is noise and you want to soften.
Exactly. And remember, all three of these things work together. You know, first, right. The object-based remastering does its job. First, the dual database sharpens the picture, reduces the noise. Then the HDR remastering says, now what should I increase? What's missing? What can I add to the shadows? What can I add to the lower part that was in the original signal based on what was in the original? And then super bit mapping ensures that all your colors are smooth. Now the way that that's a lot of stuff going on frame by frame by frame, why we keep stressing the bigger the brain, the better the picture, and because you can go out and get the best parts, but like I said, it's the recipe and the processing that makes sure all those parts work well together.
Mm. Beatmaster is asking something in the chat room, and I was about to send him a little note saying, oh, I'm not quite sure what you mean, so maybe you can help us understand this. Regarding Ultra HD Blu-ray, which is a little bit off on a tangent, but that's okay. Like with the first DVDs and Blu-rays, will there be a learning process for UHD Blu-rays that could see re-releases with corrected and updated versions?
Actually, probably, because I've seen some really good 4K Blu-rays, and I've seen some that were okay. Like someone just did the review on Billy Lynn, Long Halftime Walk, and I looked at it on your site, and it was like five stars. Because a lot of times, just like the TV manufacturers are learning, the cinematographers, the way they grade it, are learning. What looks great, like film grain, for example, a lot of studios are switching from HD confidence monitors, which were their consumer sets, which were plasmas, to 4K. Why? Because how much film grain do you add if you can't? Because you may add enough that it looks like film grain on a plasma, which is too much for a 4K TV. So they're learning, you know, how much film grain do you add? Do you add film grain? How do you use this capability of this higher luminances? What do you use it for? How do you capture it? How do you grade it? So there will be, when it comes to grading, there are definitely learning curves. So I think as they learn more and more, the disc will get better and better. Because it was like that with DVD. It was like that when surround sound came out. People got a little carried away with everything whizzed over your head like a straight,
right.
You know. And eventually they realized how to make it immersive. But that happened really quickly. And that's what's going on with HDR. If you look at the disc, they get better. Like look at our Ghostbusters disc, our Billy Lynn disc. They get better and better and better each time.
Mm-hmm. I did just by way of an aside here. Did you get to see Billy Lynn at 120 frames per second?
Oh, I wanted to, but I couldn't make it.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, I saw a little piece of it at NAB, but I didn't get a chance to see the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, if you ever do, take advantage of it. It's really, really good. Okay. In the last few minutes we have here, I just wanted to touch on another technology that made its appearance in the Z9D, which is an LCD TV with a full array local dimming backlight. But this one's got, again, a big brain behind it and some more kick than you might expect. A master backlight drive. Tell us about that.
So backlight master drive. So the premise of this is there's actually two things that it does. The first thing is we need it. It's more about points of control. So the question is how many points of control do you need in a backlight system before you reach perceived pixel by pixel contrast? Mm-hmm. The problem with most backlight systems is the backlight systems are divided into zones, and zones are multiple LED lights, 4 or 5, whatever that number would be. And those zones are very large, and you can even if I have a thin object in the middle of the screen, some of the zone that should be off is still on, and you start to see blooming, and you don't get the perception of pixel by pixel contrast. In front of this would also be a diffuser, and this is just a illustration to talk about what we're doing here. So don't try to count them, okay? Because I know you guys are like that. 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't try to count them, but this is just an illustration of what we're talking about. Eventually, there's enough. You reach a point where from a average seating distance. When you look at it, the amount of bloom that you would see would be the same as if you looked at a OLED. It's perceived pixel by pixel contrast. If I put a scope on it, one pixel next to the other, it would measure. But the question is, can you see it? And that's the goal of Backlight Master Drive. Instead of it being made up of a bunch of zones, each individual LED light is controlled. Now, in order to do this, we talk about we have a technology called extended dynamic range, which is local dimming and local boosting. So we take the reserve power that's not being used in the darker and areas that are switched off, and we use it to boost the areas that are being used for highlights, which allows us to give you great blacks because I can shut it off, and extremely bright highlights. Now, if you go to number 14. The other thing that we did is I'm not sure if you remember the old plasmas, deep channel. They used to have deep channels to make sure that light from one pixel did not bleed into another. Well, this is kind of like that. The goal is to focus the light so it only goes directly where we want it to go. And that helps eliminate some of the blooming, that helps minimize the blooming even more. And also think of it like if you take a flashlight and you take it from flood to spot. Not only does it get less diffused along the edges, but the intensity of the light increases. So this allows us to increase the brightness of that highlight and also eliminate the blooming. So basically think about it. So it's like think of it as lots of little spotlights as well. So this is a new way of making a backlight system, and that's why we're so proud of it and its capabilities. OLEDs have their – so this basically maximizes – gets the most out of an LCD we can, and then we work on getting the most out of an OLED with something like the A1E.
Right. Now, I was going to say, the fact that you can control each LED separately and individually is a wonderful thing, but each LED is still encompassing a lot of pixels in a 4K display.
Yeah, but the question is how eventually we'll reach the point where it's getting pretty close now that you can't. Like I will tell you, let's look at it. If I sit off axis and look at a Z9D with the lights off, with the thing going full guns, you may see a little bit of blooming. But if I'm sitting on axis watching a piece of material, it's really difficult to see the any kind of blooming on that set. If someone wants that off axis capability and they want that extra black, we have a set now for that called the A1E, and that's what we decided. And we're going to make the best of both technologies and let the consumer pick the thing that fits their viewing environment and how they view TVs best.
Well, let's take a look at graphic number 11. I just really want to make sure that we see the difference between a zonal system where you have a bunch of LEDs in each zone being dimmed or brightened separately, but a bunch of them together versus backlight master drive where each LED is dimmed and brightened directly.
Discreetly controlled. Exactly.
Discreetly.
And that where, like I said, that you need for you to run that backlight system requires a bigger brain. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why we keep going back to the X1 Extreme.
Well, let's take a quick look. We only have a few minutes left. I would love to take a look.
Can we look at Slim Backlight Drive real quick?
That's where I was going.
Look, you and I are thinking you're on the same page, young man.
We're on the same page. Absolutely. Slim Backlight Drive is something else, a new innovation, again, from Sony that really improves the performance of edge-lit TVs. What we just saw with the Z9D is a full array local dimming backlight, which I've always maintained is the best way to do a backlight in an LCD. But it means that the TV has to be a little thicker
and heavier
and maybe even more expensive.
So
you get an edge light, you get LEDs along the edge, but that has its own problems. And Sony has solved some of those problems with Slim Backlight Drive.
Yes, what we've been stressing to people this year, and it's not about where the lights are located, it's how well you can control the lights that are coming from the back of the screen. So full array could be a great technology, but just because it's a full array does not mean it's better than an edge. You can have a one zone full array. You can have 500 zones in a full array. So just because you see full array does not mean it can outperform an edge TV. If the edge TV can generate more segments, it will provide more contrast than even than the full array set that has less segments. So if you go look at the Slim Backlight Drive, what we came up with was normally on a edge lit television set, you end up with this lights along the edge, left side, right side, bottom, or just whatever they want to put them, and they could but you end up with strips of lights that you control. So if there's something at the top of the screen and the light is at the bottom, I got to make a strip of light to get that in order for you to illuminate that object, and you end up with, like I said, a lot more blooming and a lot less control.
Right. What we're looking at here, by the way, is a graphic with three different things, and on the left is what you were just talking about. Say the LEDs are on the top or the bottom, and you're seeing these vertical stripes.
Exactly. You know, with this big stripe of material, and you see that as basically some blooming or a lack of contrast, more of a lack of contrast in some of the darker areas near it, less control. Last year, we introduced Slim Backlight Drive. And what this is, by using multiple rows of LED lights on along the edges, and we're firing them in certain orders through multiple layers of diffusers, we could generate a grid. So by firing front left, upper with this one, bottom we could make bottom right, we can make something pop up dead center. So it was a way of basically building to getting you the same effect, that grid effect you get from a full array by utilizing lights along the edge. This year it has been refined to have even more segments, and it is much brighter with better black level. So you get about two times the contrast on the new X930E than you got on the D last year. And it's pretty noticeable when you see both models side by side.
Well, that's, it's always a matter of moving forward, isn't it?
Exactly.
Hopefully.
The goal is to give you the best backlight. We give you the best processing and the best backlight system we possibly can to try to fit the need of the person that's looking at it. So we have a lot, but each backlight system is pretty advanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked a little bit about OLED. We've run out of time, unfortunately. Sony also introduced its first consumer OLED in a long time. You did have one quite a few years ago, but then you got out of the market, and now you're back in with the A1E.
Yes.
And that one is going to be, you know, as we talked about before, every pixel is controllable, not just every LED behind the screen.
Yeah.
Now, Barfel in the chat room is asking, when are we going to get to one LED per pixel? Or would that be just like an OLED?
Well, that's Cletus, which was the one we that, which is what that stands, CLEDIS stands for Crystal LED Integrated Structure. And that was a emissive display driven by lots and lots of LEDs. So so there is a professional application for that type of technology. Sony is always looking for looking at new technologies with, and trying to find the best app for each application. So right now for consumer, it's LCD and OLED, but this is something that we're offering for the pro side already. The OLED, this allows it to do really cool things that we couldn't do before, like the acoustic surface, the sound system, which is very unique. People ask a bunch of questions. Can I see it vibrate? No, you can't. Can you? You can touch it and feel it vibrate, but you can't see it. The surface area of the acoustic surface of the OLED is so big that you're not going to see it if you go to slide 20. You're not going to, the little exciters in the back of the screen vibrate the panel, make it into two very large drivers. So the movement is microscopic, but the sound is very loud and very big and very rich.
And I heard it in the black box demo room at CES this year, and it was quite astonishing.
Yes, it does. And we've been making glass speakers since we introduced our first one called the Soundtina in 2008. So we've been doing this vibration of glass for a while. You just couldn't do it with an LCD TV because there was too many layers. Diffusion layer, backlight layer, LCD layer, and then the front cover. Now, because an OLED's a sheet of glass, we can utilize these cool technologies. And then you combine that with the great processing and that panel, you end up with a very, very good consumer television set.
Now, interestingly, the acoustic surface, the actual putting little actuators on the screen, having the screen vibrate and produce the sound, you can only do that down to a certain frequency, after which if you go lower than that, you might actually be able to see the vibration. And so you shunt the low frequencies, you cross over into a woofer in the integrated bass so that doesn't happen.
Exactly. If you look at a set of electrostats, go into a store, look at a set of really nice electrostats, that's what they do. The majority of the sound is generated by the electrostatic panel, and then the lower frequencies are generated by the woofers. And go in there and turn up an electrostat as loud as you can, and you don't see them move because the surface area is so big, the movement is microscopic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, when you close the easel and you mount it, it's the same mounting distance as a normal TV. The flush mount bracket gives the woofer enough room to breathe, so it sounds great on the wall too.
Mm. Well, there you go. So many cool things coming from Sony, and I want to thank you so much for being here and helping us understand them.
No problem. Wow, that time went by really fast, didn't it?
Can you believe it? It always does. It always does. Yes, it does. Anyway, yeah, that's Phil Jones, product technology manager at Sony, helping us to understand many of the new technologies that Sony has been working on and are now available in many of their products. Thanks again for being here.
It was a pleasure.
You can find out a lot more at Sony.com. You can always find me at avsforum.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott and at avsforum. You can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/htg and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Peter Madnick, longtime audio product designer. He is most recently with Audio Alchemy. So I'm really looking forward to talking with him about his work in audio product design and what we might see in the future coming from Audio Alchemy and elsewhere. So I do hope you will join us. Until then, geek out.